The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.
I'm going to tell you about a place that was like a treasure trove, really. When I was about, what would it be, 20s, really, when I finished playing football and come back home, really. Because I left school about 16 to go and play football at Swindon Town for about 4 years. And really, I was like a monk. I was totally focused on playing football. And so really, even though I come home, I don't really take much notice of anything that was going on outside the football world. And yet I'd growed up with music being so very important to me. But what I did realise is while I were away, my younger brother Gazza, he was really getting into music and all that. And I'd come home some weekends and, and we'd have like nights where we'd go in the back room and Chrissy Granger would come round and we'd have a box of Sugar Puffs. A pork pie, they asked me why, box of Sugar Puffs and a pork pie. And then we'd talk about music and play all that music. But because I was sort of focused so much on football, and I didn't really take any notice of the stuff that was going on. So when I finished, for one reason or another, I was sort of 4 years behind everything that was going on, and I was desperate to catch up, and so our kid had said, well, look, there's this place in Brummagem where you can go and listen to albums all day and you don't have to buy them. And I went, oh, bloody hell, that's all right, eh? And so we had started to go into town a bit more, and I was getting out of myself and stuff like that and getting a bit more worldly after being in a shell for 4 years. And I can remember the first time going to this place and just thinking, you know, I was born to live here, really. And you rode up, we'd get the 126 outside the Hen and Chickens, or we'd walk across the hostel, which was at the edge of the estate, and just wait on the Wolverhampton Road. And we'd get off probably by the Town Hall in Brummagem and walk down New Street, and then turn up Corporation Street. And as you went up Corporation Street, you'd hit a big island, and then you'd cross over as though you're going down towards the law courts. And then before you get, well, just on the same building as the law courts, there was like a little alleyway, in a way. And then there was like a triangular apex to the building with this doer. And the windows were all just covered in posters and stuff, music posters and stuff like that. That was where it was. And that was probably the first Virgin record store. Now, years later, it was further up Corporation Street over on the other side on the road. And it was a proper record store, for want of a better word. You know, it had like CDs and everything and big and mega stuff. But this was like going into a cave, and you open the door, and it was a bit of a musty smell. And all around the, it wasn't very big, really. It wasn't very big. But all around the walls, there were these blue couches, quite low. And then along the wall, like on a nail, really, there were sets of headphones, probably about a dozen along every wall. Then you would look at about 4 or 5 foot, and there'd be wooden boxes nailed against the wall. And these boxes were absolutely rammed with albums because CDs wore out. But CDs wore out. I think there were a few tapes, but most of them were like album covers. And you'd have, obviously, you'd have stuff that was released here in England and Britain, but then you'd have European imports, American imports, Japanese imports, and then you'd have something that was called a bootleg. Now, a bootleg was a recording that was made illegally, and it might have been on somebody's tape machine or something, but they'd processed it and they'd brung it out and wore on a proper record label, really. But they were illegal, but they were illegal because they were just there on show, and they were just unbelievable. And I can remember we'd go in. It got to be that every Saturday we'd go to Virgin Records in Brummagem and spend nigh on all day there. And you could go. I mean, they never got annoyed. You'd have these bearded, long-haired blokes and wenches in caftans and stuff behind, and there'd be like joss sticks going on all over the place, and they'd be behind the counter, which was like right at the end, and then you'd just take an album out on one of the boxes, and you go, "Is it all right to listen to this, mate?" And you go, "Oh yeah, go on headphone number 4 or something." So you'd go and sit down and stick the headphones on, and then they'd go behind the desk. They got loads of decks, and they'd just stick it on. And you could listen to it all. And then you hadn't got a bite or anything. You'd just say, "Oh, yeah, right, mate, that's great, mate." And then you'd go back with another one. And he'd go, yeah. Well, they got to know me and our kid because we was there so often. And we did, we did buy albums. But what I loved was the gatefold sleeves. Now, a gatefold sleeve was like a double sleeve, really. So you opened it up, and all the middle was just maybe all the lyrics and then artwork and stuff like that. Sometimes you'd have things on the inner sleeve and stuff. Well, I love them because you could, while you was listening, it was like reading a book. You could spend 25 minutes just reading all the liner notes, and we become obsessed with reading who was playing on the album, who produced the album, who was singing backup vocals on the album, and also what label it was. You knew that certain labels guaranteed a quality as such. And so you were a bit au fait. And then they would chat you, and they'd add something in, like, and they'd go, "Hey, have a listen to this. You'll like this." And there were various times where, because of what they said, you got into certain artists, and there's probably three really that come to mind. And the first one is Jackson Browne. Now I can remember vividly the day because I was just having a leaf through the albums in the boxes. And I can't remember his name. I should be able to remember his name, but I can't. But there was a bloke, got a long black beard, a bit chubby, and he shouted, "We've had an import in from America that you might like." And I said, "Oh, who is it?" He says, "Well, it's a young kid, but he says, read the liner notes and it'll give you an idea." Well, there were people like Russ Kunkel, Graham Nash, Dave Crosby, James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, all contributing. And it was on the Geffen label. Now, David Geffen had a label in America and over here. And he was sort of almost like nurturing a certain type of music, like Laurel Canyon, West Coast singer-songwriter. So you knew it would either be very, very interesting, or it was just be full of quality. And he rode up. I said, "Go on then, give us a listen." And it was called Saturate Before Using. And there was like a lino cut of Jackson Browne on the front. I can remember it. It was like a brown cover lino cut. and then all the details on the back. And I put it on. I don't know where I'd be. I think I'd be on the left-hand side as you go down, where all the couches was. And I put it on, and the first track come on, and I just thought, this is blooming amazing, absolutely amazing. And there were, when you think that, you know, a lot of the stuff was written when he was 16 year old, and there was things like that you recognised the tune, but by somebody else. And there was a track, Doctor in My Eyes, which was recorded by the Jackson 5. Take It Easy, which was recorded by the Eagles. I think a bit later than Jackson Browne's version. But there were such beautiful, beautiful songs. Sung for Adam, Jamaica Say You Will, Something Fine. And I don't know if you're the same as me with music, but certain lines just stop your jed. Or, you know, the hairs on the back of your head just stick up. And this album just absolutely grabbed me. And I listened to it all, or every track. It was about an hour there I was listening to it. And this bloke, when I finished it, and I took the headphones off, he was just beaming at the counter. And he said, "Going to buy it?" And I went, "Of course I'm going to buy it." And he said, "I knew you'd love it." He says, I absolutely knew you'd love it." And I bought Jackson Browne, and I touted it round when we used to have our record nights and stuff like that. And people would say, "Well, where you had it from?" And I was saying, "Well, it's Virgin in Brummagem, and it's one of the American imports." And that's what I loved about it, because you could almost get... It was different to the Discoree. It was different to Redington's in Brummagem. You could get almost anything there. So Jackson Browne was one. And then the other one was another one on the Geffen label. And it was Closing Time by Tom Waits. Now, I thought, he said, "This is different." He said, "It's different to a lot of the stuff that you hear on this label. But the bloke is just, you know, strange and weird and... he sounds as though he's got a bag full of nails down his throat." And the album was called Closing Time. And again, I put it on, and he played. It was all, it wore like a lot of the other stuff, where it was like close harmonies, almost like tight arrangements and stuff like that. This was a bloke, as you put it on, you thought he'd be up the corner in a pub playing the Joanna and singing his songs. And again, it was just unbelievable. And again, some of his songs were recorded by other folks, like Old 55 again was recorded by the Eagles. Totally different version. But this chap was absolutely unique. Absolutely unique. And again, it was another one where it was an American import. And what I loved about the American imports, you know, they were made on cardboard. They wore like an English album cover, which was a bit shiny and quite thin. These were thick cardboard, and there was like a body to them. And it was almost like opening a book, and it was fantastic. I could go on all day about the folks that, you know, folks that are there. The first album by the Boss, Bruce Springsteen, Greetings from Asbury Park. Well, that again was on an import, and I don't think it was released here for over 12 months after. And that again, it was like nothing you'd ever heard before. It was like one of the rambling Dylan-y stuff with a bit of Tom Waits in. But it was just the characters in every song. Very, very raw, the recording. And then, of course, he went on to do... the E Street Band, the Wilderness and E Street Shuffle, which brought the E Street Band in a bit more. But that were just three of many, many, many albums that I discovered there in this, like, treasure trove. And others like Judy Sill, again, Geffen label, Rod Taylor, Steve Ferguson, all of them, they were just, you know, my mates had never heard on them. And I was going, "Well, you better come down, and this is what you can do. You can just sit on a couch and listen to music all day." Well, you don't have to buy anything, they'd say. And say, no, of course you don't have to buy anything. You just listen to the music. If you like it, you can buy it. If you don't like it, you don't have to buy it. Nobody like bugs you that you've got to bring it. It's almost like a musical commune. And then sort of earlier on, I was telling you about the bootlegs. Well, the bootlegs were in like a box on their own, and some of them were kept behind the counter if they were like special. And again, it'd gear a shout. And sometimes the quality was a bit naff. But they were, because they were rogue recordings, for want of a better word, they were really extra special. And I think I only ever bought two on them. The first one was James Taylor, a Carnegie Hall. That was a double. Again, it was thick cardboard. And because they were bootlegs, they were like unmade covers. So it was just like this. It was like this white cardboard in a gatefold sleeve. And then there was a picture of, obviously, that somebody took a picture off an album cover, one of his more reputed, but it was in like, you know, like if it's a negative. And then that was almost, it was like sellotaped onto the front of this bootleg. And I can't remember where it was processed or who did it, because I presume they had to do it like on the quiet. But it was a double album, recorded live at Carnegie Hall, and it had all the stuff off Mudslide Slim, Sweet Baby James, and some stuff that you wouldn't get on a normal album. And that was great, because you sort of had all the talking going on in between. And then the other one, which was an absolute gem, was Graham Nash and Dave Crosby live in Toronto. And that was weird. That was like another unmade cover. That wore a gatefold. It was just a normal sleeve. But there was one great track, and I think it was when they played Wooden Ships. And you can hear the, you know, it's obvious that somebody's got the tape machine on, because you can hear the audience talking in between. But then they get to this point where both of them are singing fantastic harmonies. And you hear this bottle drop, and it like rolls towards the front of the stage. So Graham Nash and David Crosby are like singing. And then this rolling bottle is getting louder and louder, and it clunks against the base of the stage. And David Crosby just has this throwaway remark about this bottle. But you just discovered so many gems there. It was unbelievable place to be. And of course you'd almost become a community, because you'd get the core folks that would go Moostwicks, and then you'd start discussing an album that you'd bought or an album you'd listened to. And then you'd get a really good relationship with the folks behind the counter, and they knew the stuff left, right and centre. It didn't matter what, it didn't matter whether it was jazz, you know, it was rock, folk, West Coast, anything. They just knew everything about every album that was in there. It was absolutely unbelievable. And I think there was like a coffee machine or a time machine in there. So you'd have, I mean, at some points it'd be so rammed that there'd be like queues waiting to put the headphones on. But nobody ever rushed you. You know, you'd say, "Are you all right, mate? You're waiting for this headphone." You go, no, you know, listen to your music, that's it. It don't matter. It was so different to anywhere, really, that I'd ever been. But of course, obviously, when they bought the, I don't know, the unit that was a bit further up the road on the left, it shut, and it just lost all of that mystique, because they're in the main Virgin Records store then. You'd have all the stuff that you'd got in that little store. And there's such fond memories. We'd come out sometimes and it'd be 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, and we'd been in there since it opened at 10 o'clock. And you just think, but all your head would just be full of all of this music from everywhere, from around the world. And you just couldn't get it out of your head. And then you'd get home, and our mum and our dad and all my aunties and that would go down the club on a Saturday night. And you'd just get your mates and you'd get them all round and go in the front room. And we had like a stereogram. And what we wouldn't do is the Stereogram would take about five LPs. But we, you know, we treasured them that much that you put them on one at a time, and you just sat there and just be spellbound by the music that you'd heard in the day, and after listening to it like a second time away from where you'd heard it, it just started to evolve, and there was, you know, different things behind every line, or every line meant something different to you, and it was like you were boarding a ship on a voyage of discovery musically, and it sort of changed. Taste is the wrong word. It changed my attitude to loving everything, really, because the bloke behind the counter would say, "Look, I've got this. It's Keith Jarrett, and it's jazz, but not swing jazz. It's like improvisational jazz." And I go, "Oh, I don't know about that." But then you'd listen to it. And some it would just grab you, or there'd be some at, what would it be? There'd be some at Mother's Finest. Excuse me. Mother's Finest. They were like a multiracial, heavy rock funk band with a bab that used to be the lead singer, Baby Gene King. And he says, "Do you like funk?" And I went, "Well, yeah, all right, I don't mind Tamla Mowatt." He says, no, this is like slab funk." And I said, "What do you mean slab funk?" He says, "Well, it's like really heavy rock music, but there's slab funk going on in the background." And he says, and the wench's voice is just unbelievable. So I can remember putting it on, and I don't know what the first track was, Another Mother Feather, I think it was called. And this voice just come out, and you know, he could see that my eyes must have been popping when I got the headphones on, because he was there behind the counter just looking at me and thinking, "Sir, I knew you'd like it, I knew you'd like it." So it wasn't just odd West Coast stuff, it was everything. You know, it opened my ears and my head to every kind of music possible, and that was like a starting point for me. And you know, I built up a record collection of 4,500 albums. And every one, you know, I listened to. Obviously some more than others. You know, I'd get Joni Mitchell albums there, and you'd have your favourites, Jackson Browne and The Boss, Tom Waits, people like that. And then there'd be like odd gems, like the Judy Sill album that I told you about, and a band called Gladstone would be another one. So there'd be odd gems, but you would, depending on your mood, because with music, it's very subjective, really. So depending on your mood is what you bunged on the Stereogram, really, and listened to. But I've got such fond memories. Two reasons, really, because our kid I hear no more. I got such fond memories of me and him being on them blue couches and then just swapping over headphones, because we'd be listening to different things, and then just smiling at one another, thinking, you know, this is the business. And because he was a drummer, he got me into somebody, the Mavishnu Orchestra. One Saturday, he says, "Look, you don't listen to this sort of thing." He says, "But there's a drummer who plays with the Mavishnu Orchestra called Billy Cobham." And I go, I'll give you to listen. He says, "Well, listen to the drums. Don't listen to anything else." He says, "Listen to his drumming." And he gets in a zone, and everything else around him is centred in that zone. And I listened to it, and it wore like anything that I'd heard before. And I just thought, this is unbelievable. And he looked across, and I got the headphones on, and my feet was a tapping, and it was a going like this. And he says, "Just get into the groove, just get into the rhythm, honey, and just listen to his drumming." And he was just, to watch, he was just the most amazing bloke, because he drummed with the rhythm of the drums, if you know what I mean. So subtle, not dynamic or lumping them like some of the rock drummers, but he just drummed from the inside out, in a way. And that was just, I would have never have ever thought of listening to that, really, without being there in that surroundings and being open being an open book to everything. So we'd get home on a Saturday night and our father had said, "Oh, yeah, I bet you've been down there all day, are you?" And I went, "Yeah, yeah, Dad, we got this and this." And he'd come and have a listen. And sometimes he'd say, "Oh, no, I could be doing with that." You know, particularly if it was like improvised jazz or something. But most of the time, he'd get, you know, why you'd brung it, why you'd brung their album. And he could see, because our dad used to sing in the Murray Brothers with me Uncle Bill and me Uncle Eric. And he'd get, you know, the musical side on it. And it was such a connection between generations. Because again, our dad was open to anything. And you could play him something that you just think, you know, like Tull or something. And he'd go, "Yeah, yeah, I know where that's coming from and all that." And it was like a connector between, you know, young lads and the father. And it sort of brought us closer together, because we'd have Matt Munro on and then we'd play Mavishna Orchestra, then we'd play Funkadelic, and then we'd play Jackson Brown, and we'd just sit there, the three of us, and just talk about music all night. It's just a wonderful music is a wonderful experience to be shared, I think. And that place, very often I go to Brummagem now, and if I'm going down Corporation Street when I'm going to university, I just stand there and I'm, you know, I'm that kid, early 20s, waiting for it to open so I can spend all day listening to the music. And it's such fond memories that you hold after all these years. Virgin Records, Corporation Street, blue couches, headphones and any music that you want.
The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tough.